Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by betonline.ag. NFL Week 7 on the docket. First, we'll recap what we saw on Monday night between the Titans and Colts. And to do so, I welcome in my esteemed co-host, the one, the only Payne Insider. I, of course, Ed Todd Furman. Payne, what did that feel like when we watched Derrick Henry rip off that 70-yard gain to ruin our small position on the Colts?
I was going to say, that was my recap. He was out of bounds.
How come they didn't review it? Serious question. Like, why not review that?
And the game was over at that point. I know they review all scoring plays, but at that point, I guess just get out of Dodge. I don't know. It was worth a look. It looked like he was out initially. And then when I saw the angle, I said, man, this is going to be a tough angle to overturn. And at that point, I just... ugly finish. In the overall picture, though, you know, it's kind of been the Colts season. They were up, I think, 19-9 early in that second half. This has kind of been their MO. And I think it's probably time to move on from Pagano. It's pretty clear he's incapable of making halftime adjustments, in-game adjustments, things of that nature. I think the Colts are 2-4 right now, right?
Yep, 2-4 right now.
Been tied or had the lead in 5 of 6 games this year. And they've been outscored by 72 points after the break. 63 in the fourth quarter in overtime. So whatever's going on there, or I guess what's not going on during halftime, is adjustments. So I think it's time to move on from Chuck.
Second half meltdowns have been the Colts' MO. There's no doubt about it. When you start to look at this team and try and handicap their games going forward, first half angles probably make the most sense. We've already spent enough time on that garbage. Of course, the Thursday show that includes garbage. A visit.
Mariota was good, though. I think there's something to take. I think Mariota was good. I think there's something to take from that. Maybe he gained some confidence because he hadn't been great this year.
He was very good from the pocket. It was almost like you removed running from the equation. He knew he couldn't do it. You saw him slide down to kind of salvage a few plays. But sitting there as a polished pocket passer, spreading the ball around, you see Eric Decker get involved. You hit on it in the Monday podcast saying Derrick Henry was going to be the bell cow for the Titans. And I think they look like a much more dynamic offense than we'd seen over the last couple weeks.
I just want to see what it does for his confidence, because he had really regressed through the early stages of the season. And maybe it's one where, hey, can't rely on your legs. Now he's a confident passer. Could bode well moving forward. I know the Colts' defense isn't very good in terms of pass defense, but there was a lot of good things there. So maybe confidence-wise, we see Mariota take a step up.
When you've lost the same franchise 11 straight times, you'll take a win any old way you can get it. Obviously, Colts backers on the raw end of that deal, especially if you were able to grab 7.5. Like I was saying, interview today with Dave Mason. He joins us to talk all things book perspective. We'll, of course, have the Thursday night football preview, a game between the Chiefs and Raiders, brought to you courtesy of the American Gaming Association's Sports Betting Coalition. But before we get there, Payne, we have a semi-attractive Sunday slate. We may as well start in the AFC North, where it's Pittsburgh playing host to the Cincinnati Bengals. The Steelers, a 5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total on this game, 41. We talked about it a little bit on Monday. This is a number on a look-ahead price that would have had the Steelers installed as a heavier favorite. They go on the road, beat Kansas City. Cincinnati does nothing on the bye. All of a sudden, we've seen the market slightly tick down in the favor of Marvin Lewis's squad.
Partly injury. If done a little reading, there's been some very important names held out of practice so far this week. 3 of them. Key cogs along the offensive line for Pittsburgh. Marquise Pouncey, Ramon Foster, Marcus Gilbert. Those guys have not practiced yet this week, so we're going to have to monitor that because that's massive, obviously. They're stud defensive linemen. Tuitt, he's also been out of practice so far this week. So injuries that you're going to have to monitor. You know, we kind of know of the Bengals' struggles offensively, but I think you could make a case, and so far the market is making that case, that you're buying low on their offense. You know, they play a game against Buffalo in the pouring rain, so those numbers are going to be depressed a little bit from that. And then you look at this, through 6 weeks, Cincinnati's faced the toughest schedule of opposing defenses. So there could be an upgrade there from the Bengals' offense, especially with the implementation of a, you know, new offensive coordinator. That bye week probably was big in terms of what Bill Lazor was doing there, having an extra week to get his hands on the offense.
When you look at the defensive side for Cincinnati, I know what their efficiency metrics say, that this is a top three defense. Does the all 22 kind of bear that out? Are you buying into what you've seen on the defensive side of the ball from the Bengals, at least through the early portion of the schedule?
Not completely. Again, so when we talk about the rain game, it's going to depress offensive numbers. They've done it against the 30th ranked schedule of opposing offenses, so they haven't faced a great slate of offenses. So I think, you know, they're certainly good. Let's make this a relative thing here, but I don't think they have the third best defense in the league.
One last thing on this particular game, Payne. When you look at kind of the strengths and weaknesses of these two teams, we know the Steelers have been extremely stout against the pass. Cincinnati struggles to run the football. Put yourself in the shoes of Bill Lazor. What do you try and devise as a game plan to attack the Steelers defense?
It's a good question. I mean, the defense has actually been good overall, you know, top 10 in both, you know, rushing success rate and passing success rate. So I think that's kind of one thing that gets overlooked is, you know, both parts of their defense have been really good this year. Now, if Stephon Tuitt doesn't go, again, you're going to want to monitor that. He has just been an absolute animal on that defensive line. So that could spring some things. And you look at Cincinnati right now, they're not very good. They're not very efficient running the ball. That's been the big problem with them. Doesn't matter who it is. They got three backs there. They just haven't been very good in terms of rush rate success offense. So I don't know if they can capitalize on the, and I won't even call it a weakness, but the weakest part of that Pittsburgh defense. You know, we talked a little bit about this total. Open 42, dropped a little bit, got dummied back up. You know, we're at 41 now. That's a key number. Not quite sure where this goes. I think at the current number, you're probably not going to see a 21 in the first half. So it probably prevents me from doing much with that total. But again, this is a rivalry. They typically trend lower scoring. You got two teams that are not very fast in pace, two of the slowest teams. So for me, nothing at this point. But professionals are on the dog here.
And like you said, it'd be key to monitor some of those injuries. So for those folks looking to use the Bengals in any potential pools or make a wager there, know exactly what that Steelers offensive line will look like. Revenge in the air in South Florida when the Dolphins get the return game against the New York Football Jets. Miami, a 3.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total on this game, Payne, 38.5. The first meeting between these two teams, arguably rock bottom for the Dolphins, and that does include a shutout loss against the Saints. They mustered a grand total of 225 yards, 30 on the ground. Did we see enough from Miami in the second half to think that they've turned the corner, or that kind of effort against the Falcons is sustainable as they look to try and get the best of the Jets at home this weekend?
I think it's always going to be sustainable if they can run the ball, and that's going to be the key here. Again, if Jay Ajayi can get going, this offense has a chance. Because we're still working Jay Cutler in. I know he's an easy target to bash, but he hasn't had a lot of time. The offensive line is allowing a lot of pressure his way. This is a guy that literally came in off the couch. He was planning to be behind a microphone this year. It's going to take time. I know it was an easy transition to him, right? He knows the verbiage. He has this relationship with Adam Gase. It's going to be a quick one. It's not. It's going to take 6-8 games to get this going, and we're starting to trend in that right direction. I know the schedule gets tough, and they probably needed to win a couple more of these earlier games. But at 3-2, you sit. You're a favorite at home here against the division rival Jets. If you pull this off, you're now 4-2, and you got a quarterback and an offense that hasn't been doing much. I think you have to like where you stand. But the key here is, again, it's all about Jay Ajayi. We know this Jets defense, 24th in defensive success rate rush defense. Mo Wilkerson at this point has not practiced, so that's something you're going to want to monitor there. But this Dolphins offense is all about the ground game and throwing off of that. Other injuries I think you're going to want to monitor when we're talking about this Dolphins offense. Pouncey had the concussion, has not practiced yet this week. Devontae Parker hasn't practiced this week yet with the ankle injury. So couple guys dinged up for the Dolphins.
When you look on the other side, what are the Jets at this point? I mean, they go out there and they put forth a solid effort against the Patriots. And I think the one thing that I've been a little bit surprised, given how they cratered late in the year, is the effort that we're seeing week in, week out for a roster from top to bottom. Probably not anywhere close to being as talented as maybe as met as 25 to 28 teams in the league, but the Jets showing effort every single Sunday.
They love Todd Bowles. That is everything that I have been told. They're playing their huevos off for him. They knew he was dealt a bad hand. It was supposed to be a complete rebuild, but you know, you start to pick up some weapons. Jenkins at tight end, he's in shape. He's extremely talented. It looks like he's bought in. You make the acquisition of Curse from Seattle. He is an NFL talented receiver. He's an NFL caliber player. And so far, through 6 weeks, Josh McCown looks competent. They're not getting a ton in the way of the ground game, which makes McCown's success even a little bit more shocking. But right now, the Jets grading out 11th in passing success rate offense. Josh McCown grading out right now as an average quarterback, I think 16th in the NFL out of 33 qualifiers. So at this point, McCown is having a fantastic season, especially when you consider they're not getting much in the way of the ground game.
You mentioned success on the ground, and this team has really been one of the pleasant surprises, I guess, in the National Football League thus far. The Chicago Bears, who find themselves 3-point underdogs with Carolina coming into town. Total on this game, 40.5 right now at betonline.ag. Payne, we know the Panthers haven't been able to run the ball, but they've been extremely good against it. The Bears enter this 3-0 against the spread as home underdogs so far this season. Against a pretty impressive slate, the Steelers, the Falcons, and the Vikings, you give Carolina a few extra days to prepare off that loss against Philadelphia. Do you expect them to look a little bit more competent on the offensive side, especially given the fact that, you know, Cam Newton's shoulder has, as we said, a couple extra days to try and get things right?
You would think, right? But just like any house, right? You need that foundation for your house not to tip over. And that's been the glaring weakness of this Panthers offense. It's their offensive line. There are serious issues there. They're really not good at anything. 31st in adjusted line yards. So the ground game is non-existent at this point. They are better in pass protection, but just 22nd in adjusted sack rate. That was the difference in the Eagles game. Nothing else. You know, once Fletcher Cox got upgraded, that Eagles defensive line lived in the backfield, got pressure on Cam, forced those two huge turnovers. And then the Eagles offense needed to go like 30 yards, I think, on their two scoring drives. One of those drives, it required 7 plays for the Eagles to go 12 yards to score a touchdown. So the offensive line for the Carolina Panthers has been a huge issue this season. I'm not sure it can get rectified. There's some talented running backs there. But when your foundation's a mess, I think you can only be so good. That's the problem, and that's really what's happening with this Panthers offense.
How do you handicap the Bears? I mean, a workmanlike effort last weekend in Baltimore to get the win outright as 4.5, 5-point dogs, depending on what shop you look at for a closing number. They did surrender 2 non-offensive touchdowns, so had to probably work a little bit harder to get that victory. But we have seen this number from when we talked on Monday, where it opened 4 down to a field goal. I think you could talk about a scenario where it settles at 3.5 with public support for Carolina. Do the Bears make for a compelling underdog here, or do you feel like it's the top of the market and it's not a stock worth buying at this juncture?
It's a good question. I think what we have seen and why professional money has been on Chicago early in this week is the adjustment factor for Mitch Trubisky. You know, we saw him make a mistake in the opening game on Monday night. He learned from it. It's a safe and conservative game plan for Trubisky. I know if you look at the numbers, I think he was 8-for-16, but 6 of those incompletions were throwaways. So when you look at adjusted completion percentage, he was pretty good. Didn't turn it over, made a couple of big throws, had some timely runs. It's going to take some time here, obviously. It's not pretty, especially when you look at the receiving core. Trying to create.
Dude's got no weapons.
No,
he's got none.
When you throw on the film and watch the receivers try to create space, get separation, It's just not there. But I do think if he doesn't turn it over the way they're playing confidently, and because of this adjustment from Trubisky, which we have now at this point, you know, about 2.5 points, this is probably why we've seen this adjustment. When you talk about an overall power rating after last week, you know, you're upgrading Chicago just a little bit here, and you know, the spot to me doesn't feel right, but that is real money on Chicago.
Well, we upgrade the Bears, we obviously have to downgrade their NFC North rivals.
A little rain there, Packers. Too, potentially this weekend, just to kind of monitor that. I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, I was going to say, well, okay, you know what, before we move on to the Packers and Saints, which I think will be a little bit more of a deeper dive, how would rain impact the potential game plan, in your opinion, for those two teams? Does it favor the Bears, who've relied much more on a ground and pound, leaning on Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen?
Yeah, I mean, right now, you know, Chicago is relying on that. They haven't been overly successful doing it. I believe 22nd in the NFL in success rate rushing. But when you have Mitch Trubisky, I think that's a positive. Just stay committed to the ground game. The other factor here I think you're going to want to monitor is Luke Kuechly. That short passing game, we made mention of this. This is where Wentz was going to feast a little bit. They play that quarters defense. You can pass short on them. I think that's probably conducive to a young quarterback with Cohen. Kuechly status still up in the air. I know we've chatted about that a little bit. I saw the play. It's like he gets hit on the shoulder and the neck. I'm like, there's no way that's a concussion. And then he was in the concussion protocol. I think there's like a mix-up here of what's going on. So I'm not sure if he's playing. He hasn't practiced yet. But then Adam Schefter came out and reported, and I'm going to quote this right now because I was just reading it before we started recording. It says, the Panthers do not believe Kuechly suffered another concussion, even though he's in the concussion protocol. Kuechly entered the concussion protocol Thursday after he collided, but the team does not believe he actually has a concussion. He came into the team facility the day after the game. He was perfectly fine. So I don't know what they're doing with this situation. Maybe they're being overly conservative because he's had like three in the last, I don't even know how many games it was. He had two last year, but they trended towards the end of the season. Now he's had one supposedly. I don't know. Maybe they hold him out here. That's partly why this line's moving also.
It's been a tough spot, and I will say some pretty good sources told me that Kuechly actually considered retirement given those concussion issues. So if that is the case here, you do have to wonder about his eagerness and desire to try and get back out there, because not an issue to be taken lightly, given, as you mentioned, the volume of concussions he's experienced in such a short period of time. Saints and Packers, one of the more fascinating games of the weekend for different reasons than we initially anticipated. New Orleans, a 5-point favorite at Lambeau Field, total in this game 47.5 right now at betonline.ag. Payne, we talked about it on Monday. We said, you know, you were going to see the market potentially agree or disagree with the adjustment being made to the Green Bay Packers now living a life without Aaron Rodgers. Number got as high as 6, and while BetOnline sits at 5, there are some 4.5 starting to pop in the market. I would imagine, I never like to take the leap of faith until I get your sign-off, that this is very real sharp money coming in on Green Bay as a home dog.
Yeah, it was one we were going to consider giving out on this podcast, and about 30 minutes ago or so, 40 minutes or so ago, Green Bay took another wave. So 6 is gone, and that's, you know, kind of to paint that picture. Once they moved the extra point back, 6 was the largest mover in terms of value. So you had 3 and 7, and once that value move happened, when they moved the extra points back, 6 became very vital. It's right up there with 4 now, fighting for that third spot. So, you know, it was a key number. Too much of an adjustment, obviously, I think numbers-wise. We know what Aaron Rodgers is to this team. He's worth a ton. 12.5 points through both threes, through both fours, through the sixes. I mean, so visually, the 12.5-point adjustment on the screen, but significantly worth more value-wise, right? When you factor in those numbers, it's going through. And, you know, to use an exaggerated example of this 12.5-point move, like, it wouldn't be the same as, you know, Alabama going from 27.5 to 40. It's just, you know, it's a significant move here when you talk about the value in those 12.5 points. And that's why no one waited for this. They jumped on it immediately this early in the week. In addition to that, And this is partly how we arrive at home field advantage. Partly. How do you perform home and away? In these two right now, the dichotomies in that are just two of the most exaggerated examples in the NFL. Green Bay, number two in average scoring over opponent in Lambeau. It's like 11. They're like plus 11 points average scoring over opponent in Lambeau Field. On the road, just a positive 1.5. You talk about the Saints at home, average points scored above opponent, 6.5 points on the road, just a half point. So when you factor in that dichotomy there for these two teams that's so massive, and then the over-adjustment in quarterback, there's no way that this was going to last. Now, you know, I don't know what Hundley is.
Well, that was going to be my follow-up, okay, so I'm glad you got there before I had a chance to ask it.
You get in there, you follow up with your question, and then I'll answer.
No. That was exactly where I was going. How do you try and figure out what Brett Hundley is going to be in his first NFL start and how much different this Packers offense has to look, knowing that a lot of the big plays they've made over the last few years with Aaron Rodgers in the mix are improvisational because things break down so quickly in the pocket?
Well, that, you know, that's perfect. That's part of my point here. I think, you know, I said on Monday that he isn't going to come in cold, right? He's basically got shot out of the bullpen. And he came in cold. So the question here is, he's going to have a full week of prep. There's going to be a game plan tailored to Hundley. Can he be productive? You know, we know the defense isn't great, so I'm not sure how much they're going to be able to shoulder this larger load. You know, they're 19th against the run, 23rd against the pass in terms of success rate defense. It appears at this point Hundley's going to get some help on the ground. But, you know, the bigger point here is, and I saw this a couple years ago firsthand in Miami, and we're also seeing it play out with the Giants. This type of offense that Mike McCarthy runs, it's absolute garbage, poo-poo. And the only way it's successful is because of Aaron Rodgers. It's basic as basic gets. You line up in the same predictable formations. And sure as shit, Joe Philbin didn't last in Miami for numerous reasons, but offense was one of them. And the weak link for the Giants has been Ben McAdoo. And that offense, their former Mike McCarthy underlings. Talked to a lot of respected people in football about this. And they said as soon as Aaron Rodgers retires, like, Mike McCarthy is going to be out probably within a season. That's how ridiculous his offense is and how reliant upon Aaron Rodgers it is. So let's see. So, you know, we basically talked out of both sides of my mouth saying, hey, points-wise, this is ridiculous. But let's just see what this looks like. And so far, you know, this decision's been made a little easier now that it's soft 4.5 and not 6.
Hey, one question for you, too. And I know we obviously don't talk a lot of fantasy. It's not our strength on this podcast. Had a listener email me and go, hey, can you guys touch on what you think the impact could be for some of the Packers, the likes of Jordy Nelson, Cobb, Ty Montgomery, etc., without Rodgers, and if you still feel like they're must-start type potential, especially in a matchup like this against the Saints?
That's interesting. I don't know why. I guess things happen to align. I was reading an article the first thing this morning about this. So Hundley has actually had 33 pass attempts, and it's generated like 7 fantasy points. So take that for what it's worth. And I know I was looking at the DFS stuff, and his price tag is like greater than Eli Manning. His price tag, and obviously defensive matchup there, it's not a great one in how they're going to employ their style. But when you start to talk about the names he's similarly priced to in DFS this week, and you look at those numbers, 33 pass attempts, like 7 fantasy points, it doesn't bode well for him and others. And I would think now that Montgomery's back a little bit and Jones is there, they're going to really try to employ a ground game here. Saints defense isn't world beaters, that's for certain, but they are trending a little bit better. So, you know, when you're talking daily fantasy, I'm probably not jumping in there at those price rates.
And the last thing on it, I think you touched on it indirectly, the total. We've seen it come from 48 to 47.5. Dumb to make the case that there is a definite correlation between the Packers being the side and this game needing to stay under the total so they can avoid a potential shootout with Drew Brees and company.
It would sound nuts, I think, to the casual fan, right? Green Bay at home, Lambeau Field, where they're so successful. New Orleans offense doesn't have much defense. You look at the final score of the Saints game, and I think to a lot of sharp bettors, that's going to create value here. I really do. So, you know, I would think this continues to trend downwards.
It'd be interesting to see kind of where some of those derivative markets open up, knowing that Green Bay may not want to take Hundley out of his comfort zone, especially early in the game, if they don't have to. Sunday afternoon, Denver and the Los Angeles Chargers. This game, a pick'em right now at betonline.ag. Total here, 40.5. When we look at the Chargers paying, it hasn't mattered where they play their home games. The last 19 times they've suited up with the home team designation, 5-14 against the spread. We've seen this defense struggle against the run, but we talked about it before jumping on air and hit on it on Monday. This number very different from what it would have looked like had these two teams locked horns a week ago.
And I'm kind of just going to throw some diarrhea of the mouth out there and just kind of talk as I would think out loud. So
I don't know where this could possibly go wrong.
I just kind of want to paint this picture. So they lose four games, right? Three or four at home initially to start the season. They're 0-4. So
yep.
They lose four games, and I'm going to air quote this, at home. And what ended up happening was it creates an inflated market when they went on the road. And it was almost as if the market priced them like they had dropped real home games. And it created this added value. And, you know, we managed to find ourselves on them the last couple weeks because of that. You can tell there's still a tough time lining the Chargers when you saw and glanced at where books opened last week's numbers. Like, someone had 5.5 in their extremely sharp book. Another opens 4. So no one really knew. Odds makers aren't really sure what they are. Now you win 2 road games and you're coming back to, again, air quotes, home. And it appears like the market is back to thinking this is a home game. And right now there is 0 home field advantage. 0. And it's a short trip from Denver to there. Denver has a loyal fan base. Now, I'm not making a case for Denver here because I'm not going to bet Denver. But when you look at,
with all that being said,
at the market, and this is really how you have to think, and it's going to sound scattered to some people. When you're trying to get the best number in the market, you have to factor all this stuff in. So one, I can tell you, like, power numbers wise, Denver should be like -2.5 here. And then you're looking at the public support. 75-80% of tickets are going to be on Denver. And there's going to be a large contingent of people that said, hey, embarrassed at home on national TV, this is going to be a bounce back spot. Denver travels very well, large fan base. They're going to probably have a 60-40 crowd advantage there. And so you start to factor all this in. Now, I'm not going to be on Denver, but if you were to play the Chargers or you wanted to slide them into a teaser, it's very possible that this number slides back across 0 to where the Chargers are going to be getting +1, and you can throw them in a teaser and get them above that 7. So this is really a bad handicap, but I'm just trying to throw out what my brain thinks and how I'm going to handicap these games, and I think it actually arrived at something halfway decent here. So if you like the Chargers, I would wait a little bit is kind of where I'm going with this.
it'll be interesting. Hopefully Dave hits on this when we get him on the line in a little bit about, you know, public sentiment, if their shop is seeing an inordinate amount of support for the Broncos as well in the short road underdog role. I'll ask you about the Chargers run defense. I mean, this is a unit that's given up 119, 152, 214, and 189 yards. Is there any hope that Anthony Lynn can get this unit sorted out? Because I feel like their secondary and pass rush should make this defense perform at a much higher level than what we've seen thus far.
Defensive line with Bosa and Corey Legit, who's two top guys, they are not performing as well as they did last year. I know Legit left last week in the third quarter, didn't return. He's got a back injury. They say it's minor. He hasn't practiced yet this week, so you're going to want to monitor that if they're without their defensive tackle. Right now, they have surrendered the most yards on the ground per game. It's like 153.
It ain't good.
They're not. 52% of rushes are grading successful. Not a positive. Denzel Perryman is back at practice this week, but I believe the designation that they put him on isn't going to allow him back until the Jacksonville game. So once he comes back, you get your Mike linebacker back. That's a positive. The other potential here, I think, and maybe why this game doesn't move across zero, Trevor Siemian. Is he 100% healthy? He's got the shoulder injury, left last game, did come back. He had shoulder issues last year. Let's see if this rears its head. But the key to beating Denver is getting pressure on Siemian. I mean, he has been horrific with pressure. So I'm looking at these numbers right now in our Excel sheet. Simeon's got 104 rating with a clean pocket. It drops to 35 when he's under pressure. And right now, he's been pressured on 35% of dropbacks. So that's going to be the key. Can you get pressure on Siemian? If you can, you're going to have a great shot of beating Denver.
I think a fascinating game to watch to try and learn a little bit more about these two teams. And for those listeners kind of sitting there with shock looks on their face, as you can tell, the Chargers get back-to-back covers. Although we didn't give them out as plays, the moratorium has been lifted going forward. They've redeemed themselves, at least in our good graces.
It was one spot with a rogue number. One spot opened 5.5 last week, get to the key number for 15 cents, and the rest of the market opens 4. It's not going to be anything I give out to anybody. Just I had access to a rogue number.
No, I mean, hey, I've used them as teaser legs each of the last 2 weeks. Thought the opportunity to be able to get them double digits against the Giants, and then last weekend teasing them from 4 out to 10. Gave ample opportunity against a Raiders team that we didn't think would be firing on all cylinders with Derek Carr. To the Sunday night game and probably the crown jewel of the NFL Week 7 schedule, it is your defending Super Bowl champion New England Patriots, a 3-point favorite, lay $1.20 on the chalk, playing host to the Atlanta Falcons, total in this game 56 at betonline.ag. And Payne, we know revenge will be on the mind of the Atlanta Falcons, one of the shortest numbers as far as the Patriots being home favorites you've seen in recent memory. But the question I have for you, does Atlanta have the pieces they need to get at least a sliver of redemption for the Super Bowl gone awry and erase that 28-3 memory, at least for a fleeting moment, in Foxborough on Sunday evening?
You would think so. I mean, going into last week, and this is why it's so tough when we look at all these metrics and all these numbers, I've watched every single Falcons game. It appears the hangover is real. But they came in last week. They were number one in the NFL in adjusted net yards per play. And it looks like, through efficiency numbers, all is right with those numbers. Visually, it doesn't look that way. And so I'm having a tough time gauging the Falcons. We know the Super Bowl hangover is real. But teams have performed pretty well in these spots with Super Bowl revenge. We saw a similar situation. Seattle went into New England, came out with a victory. This line tells you everything you need to know. It's short. It did open 4.5. We're now down to juiced 3 or 3.5 in the market. I still believe that is the side. There's question marks, I think, with Brady's shoulder. It seemed to have popped up on injury reports. He claims he's fine. I'm going to assume he's fine. Belichick throws 78 times the last 2 weeks. I think that's a good indication. He's still graded out the best quarterback in the NFL through 6 weeks. So I'm not overly concerned about that. But talent-wise, you know, not a lot there defensively. And that's been the biggest issue.
When you look at Atlanta, I know you touched on it early in the week about Vic Beasley and his status. What have you read there? Anything lead you believe that he's going to be closer to the menacing presence he was when the Falcons were at their best on that defensive line?
You would hope so. I don't think he's going to be 100%. So that's my biggest concern there. Probably be out there in namesake. Not sure he's going to be out there as a full go. But you look at what they have in terms of pass rusher, and I think he's probably better nicked up than someone else at 100%. So, you know, That's kind of where I'm at there. I think the biggest question here becomes is the style of play, right? That to me is going to be really, really intriguing because we think Sunday night football, you know, this again opens 53.5. We're now at the 56.5. Something feels off there. I get both of these are teams with two bad defenses, two very good offenses. We started to break this down. Like the Super Bowl had 37 total points heading to the fourth quarter, and there was a defensive score mixed in there. Is there a situation, and I kind of proposing this question to you, is there a situation where we see the Falcons and the Patriots, they kind of realize their defenses are a concern, 27th and 32nd, respectively, in efficiency, and they're both top 5 in adjusted line yards, so they both run the ball well. is there a situation where they try to protect their defenses here?
Oh, 100%. And I think it's a scenario. You talked about the Super Bowl. When you look at these totals, and this is where live betting becomes such a valuable option. If this game stays one possession and the teams trade touchdowns or they trade field goals, I think you're going to see both the Patriots and the Falcons make a concerted effort to be balanced offensively. Where that game plan gets thrown out the window, and where if you have an under ticket, even at the top of the market, should it get to 57 or maybe even a little bit higher, you start to get concerned, is if it's 17-3 or 20-3 and one team goes, you know what? The hell with it. We can't run the ball. We need to start chucking it around.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, this game plan starts to snowball on you, that a game that started slow pace-wise, that maybe, you know, 3-3 at the end of the first quarter, gets away from you, and you see points and points come in bunches because these teams are so susceptible to giving up the explosive play to their opposition.
Yeah, sportsbooks got hammered in the playoffs with these overs, and we were on a few of them, and you know, we're typically under bettors, but you started to figure out how these games would play out with an explosive offense. And it became, listen, if one offense gets out ahead and the other one has to play catch up, like, it is just going to be conducive to an over. And that's going to be the biggest thing, like you alluded to. If one team gets out a little bit here and the other is forced to play catch up, then they're off to the races. So that total is intriguing to me. I just don't know how high it gets. And I do. I think they'll, and I, my feeling is we'll probably get a little better game plan report closer to kick. But, you know, 56.5, I'm definitely not running to go over at this point.
And when you look at that total, I know a lot of folks have grown accustomed to us talking about first half totals as well. It looks like 27.5, 28, not available at betonline.ag just yet, but some books here in the desert hanging those particular numbers. It'll be interesting to see if it does end up ticking over 4 touchdowns. There was a little bit of professional money the last meeting between these two teams, going under in the first half. But
yep.
I think an intriguing matchup on so many different levels. You obviously know that the Falcons can't atone for what they let slip through their fingers in a game that had much bigger implications. But still, at the same time, a chance to exact some revenge. And you look at this Patriots team, clearly not as talented as the addition we saw, especially on the offensive side of the ball, limited in terms of firepower. So a game that I think will be must-see TV, and one I probably won't go take in our Monday movie review and watch on DVR like I did last weekend with the Broncos and Giants.
Help me out with my bad memory. Was the first half total, what was the first half total in the New England game? For the Super Bowl.
I want to say I feel like I saw a 30 at some point, but that may be a little bit aggressive. It was definitely 28.5 or above, because there were points where that total got as high as 59.5. I feel like 30 was kind of the buy point for some of the groups out there.
Okay.
So we've seen a change there. But at the same time, I mean, we've seen some of these Falcon totals adjust given the matchups they had in the postseason. The game against the Packers, similar scenario, that total opened significantly lower this year than it did last year and ended up climbing over. But for the same reasons we outlined, one team got behind, had to abandon their game plan and start chucking it around. We also know the Falcons, a much different team home and road. The last question, I don't have it pulled up. I'm not sure if you do right now, Payne. Any weather expected in the forecast at Gillette?
I didn't see a ton, no.
Yeah, it looked like from when I checked earlier in the week, it was going to be relatively clear. So
overcast night game, you know.
Yeah, you want to keep tabs on. Obviously, the Falcons not as accustomed to playing in inclement weather as the New England Patriots. We do have a marquee Thursday night football game to get to and potentially some strong investment advice. But before we do so, a little bit of business to take care of. It's the Thursday tradition around these fine parts. We welcome him in each and every week, Dave Mason. Of course, you can follow him on Twitter at Dave Mason B-O-L. And Dave, I want to know if you've come down from your emotional high given the book's performance over NFL Week 6.
Yes, as of yesterday, I did. It was a good week. It was a great weekend for NFL, for the house. Sunday was the second biggest day in the history of the company for a win for the house. That week, what was it? I think week 3 this year, that was that monster. So this is right after that. I think it's week 3. But the good results, I mean, just about everything. Dolphins were huge. Jets was massive. The biggest was that Vikings. I mean, that there was so much money on the Packers, you know, kind of unfortunate that Aaron Rodgers went down to assist our win, but that was just such a huge decision. Giants at night. To be perfectly honest, there really wasn't any bad results for us during Sunday. I mean, the Saints, the public buried the point spread, but we won big on the money line. The Titans, they were all over the Titans, the public, but the Sharps, for whatever reason, were on the Browns. So, no, it's like just about every result was good, kind of a chop-chop to unbelievable results. So, absolutely no complaints, and the action continues to be through the roof. So, that's the big thing. You know, we got so many players that are coming back playing. So, you know, on to next week.
There were a lot of good reasons before the game started for Sharp guys to be on the Browns, Dave. It just didn't materialize once the game went on. When we look, at the landscape through 6 weeks, good season or great season so far?
Very, very good. October has been great. September is kind of... September's just so many bonuses rolling around out there too. It's like you think you're having a great month, and then it's like, whoa, you look at the final number and it's like it's nowhere near as big as you can, because we have all the – I mean, we had that – the most generous kickoff bonus in the industry. You know, we had that 50% on every reload in August and September. So, I mean, those bonuses really dig into your bottom line big time. So – September was good. It wasn't as good as you would think it would be. October's been great, so let's classify it as very good. But as I've said before, I from the marketing side, I'm more concerned with active players and everything. So, and that's been great. I mean, no complaints there.
That makes sense. And as we transition to the now, NFL Week 7, we'll let you start where you'd like. Talk to us about Sharp and Square Action.
Not a lot of Sharp yet. Broken record time, but more and more will be coming in as we get closer to the games. Falcons +3.5, that got hit. That's now +3 with a big rematch with the Patriots. Bears +3.5, that's now +3. Public, all sorts. I mean, there's a lot of road chalk out there. Whenever that's out there in that, -3 to -6 range, we're going to be buried on those road favorites. Chiefs tonight, 87% of the bets are on the Chiefs. Titans, 78% are on the Titans. Jaguars, 75% on the Jaguars. Those are three road favorites right there. Vikings, 67% is on the Vikings. Panthers, 83%. 65% on the Saints. 68% on the Cowboys. Broncos is going to be huge. 82% on the Broncos. That's their lone dog of the week. And they're only a one-point dog, so not much of a dog. But that's their one dog pick of the week. And the Eagles, 67% of the bettors are on the Eagles so far. So plenty of sweats to be had this weekend.
You guys, I know, wouldn't have it any other way. You mentioned trying to keep folks active, Dave. And if people don't have an account currently at betonline.ag, what can they do to get in on the fun?
Well, I spoke about bonuses and how players really, they extend, even if they can't roll the bonuses over, it still extends their life with that initial deposit. Head on over to betonline.ag, sign up for an account, use promo code 75BTB for a one-time 75% welcome bonus. If you already have a betonline.ag account and you've not used the Bet the Board reload yet, use promo code 50BTB for a one-time 50% reload bonus. The maximum bonus is $1,000. All the terms and conditions can be found at promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard.
That's Dave Mason. You can hear him every Wednesday talking all things college football, every Thursday talking all things NFL on the Bet the Board podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at Dave Mason, B-O-L. Dave, try not to gloat too much if the public gets their teeth kicked in yet again. Best of luck this weekend, my friend.
Yes, sir. Talk to you soon.
Well, I guess, Payne, Dave answered one of our questions. Apparently, folks can't get themselves enough of the Denver Broncos these days.
That makes sense. So, yeah, let's see if this goes. I mean, we're looking at pick pretty much throughout the market right now. So, let's see where this goes. There's some injury concerns there, obviously. Emmanuel's going to be out as well. That was a nasty ankle injury. Collins went low. I know he was trying to pick the ball off just wrong time there. Wrong spot, wrong time. So now you're looking at that Broncos receiving core. Man, I don't love it. And Demaryius Thomas, as big as he is, plays physical, I guess, when he wants. But it's not a great receiving core now.
No, down another weapon probably doesn't help their cause, of course. No surprise when Dave talks about road favorites getting a ton of attention from the general public. Also not a surprise that last Sunday, one of their bigger weekends that they've had, not only this season, but in company history, as their volumes continue to grow. So hopefully our Bet the Board listeners aren't lining their pockets, given some of the games that we've provided so far this season. Thursday night, when we look at the Chiefs and Raiders contest, you're seeing Kansas City paying a 3-point road favorite at betonline.ag. Total on this game, 46.5. And I guess the simple question I have for you, do the Raiders have an advantage anywhere on the football field?
Ooh, well, I mean, their season is on the line. I think the plan for Oakland is simple. The question becomes, can they execute it? We saw Pittsburgh do it. They out-physicaled the Chiefs, ran it right down their throat. Right now, anytime an opponent runs the ball against KC, the Chiefs are allowing it to grade out successful 52% of the time. You get the Chiefs, they're traveling nearly 2,000 miles across two time zones on a short week after, you know, they got beaten and battered basically on Sunday evening. The roles have reversed. If you remember last year, it was the Raiders making this trek out on Thursday night across the country. It just didn't bode well. So, you know, the Raiders right now, the offensive line isn't performing great. The ground game hasn't been great, but it hasn't been bad, right? It's average in terms of success rate. So that still needs to be the plan you implement to beat the Chiefs. If I'm looking to back the Raiders, I think the one matchup that does scare me is Alex Smith in passing, as crazy as Zach is going to sound or would have sounded at the beginning of this year. You know, we know Alex Smith has improved his vertical passing game. He's actually number one now on the season in deep throws, but he is still extremely efficient in that short to intermediate. That's been his bread and butter for his entire career. Right now, on passes from 0 to 14 yards, Oakland is allowing quarterbacks to complete 74% of their passes left, 77% down the middle, and 71% right. For, you know, Andy Reid, Alex Smith, and their bevy of, like, these gadget plays and gadget players, that scares me a little bit, and I think why we have seen this Chiefs team have success recently. They've won four straight. Navarro Bowman, he comes in, he was added at this stage in his career. He hasn't been good. Looking at this right now, graded out the 63rd best linebacker. Pretty good against the run, but after that knee injury in 2014, he had the Achilles last year. He has trouble in coverage. He's not as effective blitzing. So how much of a help is he going to be? I don't know what the Raiders were thinking. They let Perry Riley go in the offseason. They've had an injury or two now, and so far at middle linebacker, you know, they've kind of rotated between two undrafted rookies. It hasn't worked out well. So I do think Bowman, he's got to play a little bit. It's a short week. How much of the playbook will he have picked up in, you know, 2-3 days? Either way, I don't think he solves the issue against the passing in the middle of the field, which is going to be the Achilles heel tonight, I think.
When you look at Kansas City, how much do some of the injuries they're dealing with on the offensive line concern you?
Definitely have to be factored in. They've dealt with one of them pretty much throughout the course of the entire season in the way of their center. You know, couple guys beat up there. That was a physical game against Pittsburgh, and it's more about the spot and the situation. So, like, let's, you know, I'm not going to spoil the surprise here. You know, professional money is going to be on Oakland. They've already hit this, got up. It was teetering on the point of this potentially going to 3.5, but this is Oakland season, so they're going to have to figure it out tonight. They're going to have to figure it out quickly, but that spot and situation, I know I was talking to our buddy Fortenbaugh. He had this circled before the beginning of the season. In this spot on the short week, 11-1 against the spread, 11-1 straight up, and it's basically a team that played on Sunday, traveling across the country for a Thursday game across two time zones, 1,500 miles or more. It's 11-1 against spread, 11-1 straight up. And this is, and I'm not a huge trends guy, but that one makes sense. That one has legs to stand on, right? There's a narrative that makes sense to this. And it probably makes a little bit more sense when you're talking about a Kansas City team that was in a physical dogfight Sunday evening. This is Oakland season right here. This has got to be a game effort.
The proverbial kitchen sink game for Jack Del Rio and company. Well, Oakland loses this one. It falls to 2-5.
That's giving Jack Del Rio some credit. I think maybe like he's just tossing the Brillo pad. I don't know if it's the full kitchen.
I mean, Jack looks like he's in pretty good shape. I mean, he might actually be able to move a actual kitchen sink over there. I'm not sure what that's going to do to the game plan.
Can we go hot take here?
Oh, I mean, what better way than to close out Thursday podcast time with a hot take?
I don't want it to become this. So you kind of teased it.
No, I'm not saying. No. Hold on a second. Hold on. We're not going to make this a staple on this podcast. No. Let's be clear there.
And there is some relevance. But for 1 week and 1 week only. There is some relevance to this. You kind of told me off air. I'd kind of talked to some of my guys. They say it's a real thing. I know it got reported. We danced around this the other day. It is somewhat relevant to discuss here. Oakland's offensive line, which is one of the best units in the NFL, has suddenly not been very good and probably was the cause of Derek Carr getting injured. There has been talks that because Derek Carr chose not to kneel and hold hands with the offensive line, that they didn't take too kindly to that. It's the only offensive line in the NFL that is comprised of all African Americans. There is not a single white guy on the offensive line. Hudson, who was graded out like one of the best centers in the NFL, he hadn't allowed a pressure in like two full seasons. Suddenly in that game where Derek Carr goes down, he had allowed a ton of pressures. There was, if you put on the All-22, he's like snapping the ball at Derek Carr's ankles and knees. Is that been solved? I don't know. And that's why it's been a little scary for me to endorse Oakland as like a full-blown player. I don't know if that locker room's 100%. The guy who reported this supposedly doesn't want to claim his name because he spoke to some internal folks with the Raiders. And they said, you throw this out there and you're never going to be allowed in this locker room again. So this story has not picked up a ton of steam. And I think we know overall, I don't give a shit what side you're on, Republican, Democrat. We're all here to win some goddamn money. I don't give a shit about any of that. But we know the majority of the media is comprised of left-wing media, so it's probably not going to get out there. But I think it's something to talk about and monitor.
Yep, it definitely changes the narrative completely if this is the kind of dynamic that Oakland is dealing with in their locker room. And you hate to make a parallel to a movie. It reminds me of what's the movie with Adam Sandler where he's the quarterback in the prison yard with the offensive line just kind of trying to give him the matador treatment and lets him take his beating until he proves that he's worthy of them. You'd like to think that Oakland and Derek Carr coming back as quickly as he did from a crack back, that maybe this Raiders offensive line looks like that stalwart unit that we saw last season. And as you mentioned, they lose today. Forget the Raiders. We talked about them being a very popular underbet from professional bettors coming into the season. That would have a great opportunity to cash before the close of October if Oakland is 2-5 through their first 7 games. So we've given you the biggest games on the board this weekend. We've previewed the Thursday night football game in great detail. We got some thoughts from Dave Mason in terms of who the book will need this coming weekend. Payne, do we have a strong piece of investment advice to go to the window with come Sunday?
Well, my dog is just full-blown snore mode right now. So if anybody hears that and thinks it's me nodding off, and I have like narcolepsy, that ain't it.
Well, no one's going to fault you. You have to deal with me 3 days a week, so no one's going to blame you for that kind of thing.
The dog is in full-blown snore mode. I will say this. We were going to give out the Packers at 6, and that got soiled a little bit here now that it's 4.5. So let's wait on something. We'll give it out on the blog on Sunday. It will be the top blog on the website. It'll literally hit you in the face. It'll be on the top. Just click the read button and go to the bottom. Scroll there. I don't want to keep doing this, but again, totals, last week we saw the market wasn't open. Half the people were complaining they couldn't get 21, so we can't give out any totals now with the new market. Maybe it changes, and we'll adapt if it does. But right now, there's just one spot with first half totals open. We did give out a best bet on the podcast for college football, so listen to that. You'll get that. And then again, we have the column at Outkick. A lot of people, you know, we got in a little discussion, like, you know, with someone saying, I think we were, you know, whatever record he indicated, which wasn't accurate because again, we're giving out another pick with the Outkick article. So I think overall for those scoring at home, 12 and 9. So it, you know, it hasn't been our usual standard, but you're not going to go broke picking 57%. So we just want to kind of ensure that we're giving out the best bet for us, that we're betting a bunch of games, but we want to give out the best one. So let's wait till Sunday for the NFL. It'll be on the website. And at that point, you know, I think we'll have something that isn't going to be on the move. Today's Thursday. Market limits increase. Tomorrow's Friday. Market limits increase. So you start to see a little bit of these move. So I think we'll have something a little more set in stone on Sunday.
Marathon, not a sprint. One last piece of business, Payne. Shirts inventory dwindling quickly. Yes. For those folks that want to try and get in the mix, they better move quickly.
Yes. If you're a small guy, the mediums, I think there might be like one medium left. If you're a big guy, I think there might be like one double X left. And then there might be, I think, maybe a handful of large and extra large left. I mean, we sold like hundreds of these things, hotcakes. So small inventory left. If you want one, get them now. They will ship on Tuesday.
Bet the Board official podcast gear fresh for you for the 2017 football season. For Dave Mason, who joins us every Wednesday to talk college football and Thursday to talk all things NFL of betonline.ag. You can follow him on Twitter at Dave Mason, B-O-L. Payne Insider, you can follow him on Twitter as well. And I am Todd Furman. You can follow me there. One last order of business that I failed to get to earlier. For those folks interested in the ongoing efforts from the American Gaming Association and their push for legalization to bring sports betting to a casino or mobile facility near you, check out the website sportsbettingamerica.com. All sorts of great stuff for those folks that are fascinated about the lobbying efforts, the ongoing legalization stuff, the job creation, just so much information. I'll be doing my best to tweet out the link so you can check that out as well. But sportsbettingamerica.com is the website. Looking forward to getting AGA CEO Jeff Freeman on with us a little bit later this season. So all things sports betting, we're not just here to pick winners. We want to try and move the discussion forward in a creative and educated light. So in the meantime, best of luck. You make a wager?
I know you're busy. We forgot this too.
Jump in.
Man, I'm just swamped this year. My brain is like everywhere. We forgot to talk about the Week 6 NFL contest winner as well.
Oh, that's a good point.
So we'll give him a quick shout out. Yep. His name is Sean Curran. I'm probably butchering that. S.K. Curran, C-U-R-R-A-N. The Bet the Board Week 6 winner. So congrats to him. I think he's got like 22 points on the season. So he is right up there contending for the overall season long haul of $1,500. So congrats to Sean.
Yeah. See, I mean, it's been outstanding results. I can't, if we were to try and put in perspective what some of our listeners have put together in this contest, I think we've all kind of been floored, but we expect the best from you as our listeners, as you guys expect from us every week. So as I was saying, my fault for not taking care of some of the housekeeping matters first and foremost. Should you get to the window tonight with the bet on the Raiders and Chiefs, best of luck. And of course, for Sunday's strongest investment, check out the blog. It'll be posted there, and we'll see you at the window.